Welcome to Biohacking with Brittany. Thank you for tuning into this episode today. I am so excited to announce that I have actually launched my Baby Steps course and program, finally. So if you're listening to this and you're within the waitlist timeframe, which is, you know, the first kind of 48 hours since this episode has come out, you will actually be able to access that exclusive opportunity. And I am just so excited about this. So we have the URL set up. We have so much of it set up. You can go to babystepsmethod.com. And I'm just so proud of this moment. So to kind of back up a bit, I had this idea of preconception health about a year and a half ago, and really how I could optimize that phase in my life. And I looked around and everything kind of told me to, you know, avoid drinking alcohol or take a prenatal vitamin, and that's about it. And as a biohacker, I kind of knew that there was more that we could do to optimize that time, optimize fertility, balance my hormones, and get myself as healthy as I could be before trying to conceive. And so I did so much work on this. I spent about a year biohacking my health for it. And there's going to be episodes that are going to come out all about that. And then I did my baby steps protocol for 3 months. And that was awesome doing that as well. So I really, really encourage you to go and check out that page. I'm so excited about it. We've been working so hard on it. And there's so much goodness there. So if you actually are listening to this 2 days, like 2 days after it's up to 2 days after this episode has been published, I think it ends at the end of April 4th, you can get the waitlist access. And so essentially this is $100 off the course. It's $299 US. And I also threw in a free consultation with myself for 30 minutes. And that is starting to be booked up in May. So that is a crazy, crazy deal. I will never do that again because time is limited and it's a one-off promotion for everyone who's been on the waitlist in, you know, how I can say thank you to you and just appreciate you and support you for supporting me, to be honest. So I'm just so happy to do that. I'm also so excited to meet with you guys in May in these one-on-one consultations. I'm so excited to have you like ask me your fertility and preconception questions and just help you optimize your health, you know, like beyond the basic nutrition plan or diet. Like, let's really dive into how red light therapy can be supportive for you, or cold plunges or detoxing or saunas, like all of these different therapies. And that's all in my course that is now available. So definitely go check that out. And I'm so curious what you think. And I'm so grateful for all of the positive feedback that I have received so far. So I will keep updating you on this podcast about where I'm at with it, what's going on with it. Just a couple of things that are coming up on the horizon. If you have signed up or if you're going to, we are bringing in monthly live Q&As, which are going to be a lot of fun, where anyone can join. I'm also doing expert podcast interviews, which will only be published in the course. So I have a lot of friends and I know people in this space, and there's people who are very educated on their one specific topic that we could take that topic, make it about fertility and preconception health, sit down for an hour and just have a really in-depth discussion so that you can learn way more. And I really want to do that for some really complex topics like epigenetics or how EMF impacts the ovaries and things like that. So that's going to come. And I'm doing video lessons as well. And then the live Q&As, and then the on and on and on. And then probably by the end of the year, maybe we are going to be doing one-on-one private consulting with myself and potentially other people as well. So that is kind of what it's going to turn into, is more of a full-on program where you get the course, you get to work with me one-on-one, during your preconception time so that we can really dive into what's going on with you personally. But you also have everything that you need, all the facts, all the science, all the research in one place, all of the people and the community in one place to really support you as well. So as you can see, there's been so much love and time and thought that has gone into this. When I looked around, I didn't see anything like it online, and that's why I created it. So babystepsmethod.com, super easy to remember. I could spell it, but I don't think I need to. And you can go and find that exclusive promotion right now. Again, it ends at the end of April 4th, midnight PST. And so yeah, enjoy that. And today's podcast episode is all about the microbiome. We get into probiotics, we get into xenobiotics and our environment. And it's a very interesting perspective on bacteria and really how it impacts our health in a very, very different way. So we talk about sugar, which I definitely haven't, and I talk about this on the podcast, but I definitely haven't, you know, necessarily connected the dots of, okay, when I eat a lot of sugar, this is actually what it's doing for my microbiome, or this is what it's doing for my good bacteria or my bad bacteria in my gut. And so we really kind of dive into that. And Martha, who is joining me on this episode, is a wealth of knowledge in this space. She has quite the story, and I think you're going to really resonate with it and learn a lot from this episode, because, you know, honestly, I learn a lot from most of my episodes. So that's kind of the best part about having all of these experts on the show. And shout out to the sponsors of this week who really make this show possible. Mimio, I am so, so grateful for them. They have such a cool, cool product. So they have a supplement stack that is four different ingredients that are biomimetic ingredients. Now, biomimetic, when you hear that word, that means that it's mimicking something in the body. So it's very natural. So there's no harsh reaction to it. And they took these four ingredients after studying them and seeing how they really support aging, longevity, and cellular health. So it's things like spermidine is one of them, nicotinamide is one of them. And really, they put them together, and there is more evidence that they work better together than when they work separately. So they created this stack, and that's what Mimio is. So if you're listening to this and you care about longevity, you care about your cellular health, you care about your mitochondrial health, Mimio is definitely one of those supplements that you should be taking. I literally am staring at it on my desk right now. I would definitely recommend it. It's linked on my website and in my show notes. And you spell Mimio, M-I-M-I-O, in case you're wondering. And you can use my discount code to get the most amount off. This is super important because I want you to be able to save. You know, a lot of these longevity supplements aren't necessarily the cheapest things. So when you can get a discount code, I really, really recommend you take it. That's what I do as well. Whenever I buy anything, I really look for all of the affiliate and discount codes as well, because it just makes a difference. And then a shout out to Leela Quantum Tech. I love what they do. And honestly, I'm really thinking I need to do another podcast episode with them. So they create products that neutralize EMF in the home. And this is something that's been super on my mind lately. Actually, I was thinking about it this morning because we are moving to a new house and we are setting up our Wi-Fi routers. And I was thinking like, whoa, where are these going to go? Where am I sleeping at night? Where am I working? How much am I going to be blasted by this EMF all day? And then I remembered, thankfully, I have Leela Quantum Tech. I have a couple of their products that really help mitigate and neutralize this EMF in the home. So it kind of gives me a peace of mind. There are some strategies I still do, but it is an extra layer of, you know, I don't know, an extra layer of peace of mind or an extra layer of safety, I guess, that makes me feel really good about having them in the home. So definitely check out Leela Quantum Tech if you are interested in EMF and kind of making your home safer. They also have products for when you travel as well, which can be really, really helpful. And I also use them. So I use their Heal capsule, which is on like a necklace, and you can kind of take that everywhere with you. We did a podcast episode back in January, and this explains the science, gets into how it works. So I suggest you listen to that. It actually came out January 9th, if you want to find the specific one. And I know that because I've had so many people ask me. So check out that podcast episode if you are interested in reducing EMF in your home. Again, I have a discount with them. You can go through the link in my show notes and on my website, and then you will be able to get it. Enjoy this podcast episode today. This is all about probiotics, microbiome, sugar, metabolism, everything like that. I think you're going to enjoy it. And I will catch you for another episode on Friday. Welcome to Biohacking with Brittany. I am thrilled that you are listening to today's episode. We are going to be diving into all things microbiome. And I'm actually excited about this because I feel like I haven't talked about the microbiome in quite some time. And we are going to actually take a very unique perspective of it, something that I love to do here on this biohacking show. And I am joined by Martha Carlin, who is a pioneering force in this space and in microbiome research. She is the CEO of the Bio Collective and BioT Quest. And she was actually inspired by her husband's Parkinson's diagnosis, which we're going to get into. And she started looking at the gut-brain connection and its impact on health and everything like that. So she has created very interesting probiotic formulas, which I'm excited to learn more about. And so Martha, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited that you're joining. So I would love for you to kind of start us off with what happened with your husband and how did that kind of like spark this newfound interest in holistic health for you?
Well, so it was back in 2002. I was traveling a lot for my job, and actually John was staying home taking care of the kids, which was pretty stressful, but started to notice a little bit of a tremor in his pinky and in his tongue. And a lot, really what was the big key for me was the loss of facial expression. It's almost like somebody's looking through you. They aren't really looking at you. It's kind of hard to describe unless you are familiar with the mask face of Parkinson's, but I had read the Michael J. Fox, his first book, and he talked about some of those early symptoms. So I got my to go to his internist and went through the whole thing of looking at that, and he didn't really notice anything. And I mentioned at the appointment, well, what about his loss of facial expression and his tremor? And then I could see this light bulb go off, and he sent us to a neurologist. And it was pretty quick diagnosis from the neurologist. And they're really, they kind of lack a very warm bedside manner in general. And coming out of that, we just both felt very downtrodden because they don't really give you any hope. And I have always been kind of a fixer, a problem solver in my business career. I was a business turnaround expert. And so I just looked at it and said, well, I think I can apply my business skills to this Parkinson's systems problem. And you know, started thinking initially, okay, I'm going to look at what's flowing through the system. And of course, the first thing you look at there is the food and the water. And so that set me on this journey of looking at our food supply and trying to understand more about what we put into our bodies and changing the way we ate so that we moved back to more natural foods and looking for organic, which there really wasn't much available of in 2002. And so that whole process took from 2002 until I read a book called Missing Microbes in 2014 by Dr. Martin Blaser. And that was the big aha for me where I heard of the microbiome. And from that point forward, then there was research published where they showed they could identify the two different primary types of Parkinson's by the gut bacteria. And I quit my job and basically started funding some research, which led to founding the Bio Collective in order to not just look at Parkinson's, but look across the population at the gut microbiome as that map to what is going on and connecting that back to these large-scale environmental issues in our food supply.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you kind of connected the dots like that. I think we don't always necessarily connect those dots of the microbiome with complex health concerns, with environmental issues and toxins. Like that, even that way of thinking is just very above and beyond what the average person would do. So, you know, I'm sure most people understand what the microbiome is, but how do you personally define it to maybe somebody who has never heard of the microbiome and doesn't really understand how it might work?
So the microbiome is the trillions of microbes, bacteria, fungi, viruses, protists that live in and on our body. And they function as our internal pharmacy, really to maintain our health. So they are making vitamins, hormones, neurotransmitters. They're helping break down the food. So they're really critical part of our health. And we're actually more microbial than we are human. So in terms of genes that are involved in processes in the body, the microbiome represents anywhere from 150 to 300 times the genes that we have as a human. So without them, we really couldn't survive.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think about the, and we're going to get into your products a bit more, but what do you think about all of these probiotics we're seeing on the market that have so many trillions and billions of a single strain of probiotic in them? I'm curious what you think before I tell you what I think from my own personal research and information, but I just see so many of them now. And I want to know what your two cents is when you see them like in the market or things like that.
Well, what most people don't realize is the vast majority of probiotics in the market today come from just three suppliers. So there's about, you know, roughly a dozen strains that are widely available commercially from these three large vendors. So most of the time when you're going into a store and you're looking at these different products, many of them are going to be quite similar. And the sort of the dogma maybe is that more colony forming units is better, and that the higher you get is better. And that, you know, there is some argument for that in terms of action, but we really look at building teams, because in an ecosystem that is your body or even outside in the soil, these microbes work together as teams. So a single strain by itself is maybe not going to have the type of action that you really want, even if you put it in at, let's say, 200 CFU. So it's really more those teams that are working together, which, you know, fermented foods are teams that are working together. So I like to use that as an example. You know, kefir or sauerkraut has teams that are working together. But you can, you know, you can get some benefits depending on the strain by having a high count of a single strain.
Let's talk about Mimio, a breakthrough longevity supplement that hacks your biology to help you look and feel younger. It was created by PhDs in nutrition from over 7 years of clinical research, and Mimio was designed to mimic the longevity benefits of fasting in a simple daily pill. Not only has Mimio been shown to extend lifespan in animals by 96%, but users have been able to take as much as 2.5 years off their biological age in just 8 weeks. How? Mimio's groundbreaking biomimetic formula uses a patented blend of all-natural metabolites that work together to help your cellular health from the inside out. First, there's OEA, which is a metabolic supercharger clinically proven to help control appetite and promote fat metabolism, so you can crush those cravings and silence food noise throughout the day. Then there's spermidine, the cellular autophagy activator, helping clear out cellular junk to boost cognition, clear brain fog, and refresh your cells. Next, there's nicotinamide, a broad-spectrum NAD plus booster that's been shown to improve everything from metabolism to skin glow to immune health. And lastly, there's PEA, one of the body's most powerful rest and repair molecules that helps control inflammation, relieve discomfort, and enhance recovery so you can get that youthful energy back. Mimio is designed to work like a super fast, super efficient fasting diet, but without actually having to fast. It's all about tapping into the power of your own biology, giving your body the cheat code to work its best, making you feel younger and healthier today. You can try Mimio today. Use my discount code at checkout, which is BiohackingBrittany, and you can get all of these benefits in a simple supplement today. Again, that's BiohackingBrittany in all capitals. So definitely try it and let me know what you think. Yeah, I agree with that narrative. I think it's this idea of like more is always better. And it's actually kind of like that with all supplements, to be honest, which is definitely not the case across the board. But what I was, you know, when I studied and what I learned was like a diverse gut is a healthy gut. And so taking one strain over and over every single day is just kind of bombing your gut with that single strain compared to, like you were saying, like eating something that is fermented, which has multiple strains and also comes with enzymes and different nutrients in there that can really flourish the gut and help it to be more robust because it's so diverse versus just like this one thing that you're taking every single day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The best analogy I ever heard about the microbiome, I don't know who told me it, and it might be very common that people say this, but someone told me once that the microbiome is like a rainforest. If you think about the Amazon rainforest and the thousands, if not millions, I don't know how many species that live in the Amazon rainforest, from like the big predators to the bugs to the bacteria, like that's how diverse, like you want it. You want it to be diverse and robust and strong as an ecosystem almost, versus, you know, when we take things like antibiotics or certain environmental toxins that kind of wipe out everything and then you're building back, but you only have a few species. So what do you think about that analogy? Like, do you agree with that, or where do you stand?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. And actually, antibiotics was one of the kind of patterns I recognized in people with Parkinson's, is that quite frequently had repeated strep infections as children, or they had used long-term antibiotics for acne in their teens. So they had this long history of antibiotic exposure. And there's some research showing, like, the more times you're exposed to antibiotics, the more difficult it becomes for your core microbiome to repopulate. And so you start to lose that resilience and diversity over time. You know, maybe one or two exposures you can bounce back from, but each time it becomes more difficult for that ecosystem to rebound. And in Parkinson's, there's research showing that the core microbiome is less stable. So they just don't have that core stability that most people will carry throughout their life if they remain healthy.
Okay, that's interesting. If someone takes antibiotics for whatever health reason, how long do you think it would typically take for the microbiome to bounce back to what it was before taking that round of antibiotics?
Well, so that was actually a big part of Dr. Blaser's book, was about the use of overuse of antibiotics and how it was potentially driving the rise in chronic disease. And he showed certain classes of antibiotics, macrolides being one of those, that the gut never rebounded from. So it really just depends on the resilience of your own ecosystem and the particular class of antibiotic and how that's working. So people who end up with C. diff, as an example, if your people are familiar with that infection, is where, you know, multiple doses of antibiotics wiping out everything except the C. difficile bacteria. And then it's very hard to repopulate in that situation, absent fecal transplant.
Wow. That's very interesting. Yeah. And it's pretty serious if you take a round of antibiotics and you actually don't come back from it. That makes me definitely take pause. I mean, not that I take them anyway, but I guess there is a time and place for them. But it would be pretty detrimental to think, wow, this could have, you know, a lasting impact on the rest of my life and the rest of my microbiome. Is it worth it, really, at the end of the day?
I mean, certainly there is a place for antibiotics and they've saved many lives, but we've become a society of, we don't want to suffer through any kind of a symptom. So you know, people will go, and a symptom is really our body reacting and our immune system trying to resolve the problem on our behalf, but we want to kind of shut down those symptoms because we've sort of been trained that way. And so people go to the doctor and ask for antibiotics. Now, I will say in the last decade, since the term microbiome has gotten more into the broader consciousness, that physicians are a little more discerning about prescribing antibiotics, but the dermatologists and dentists probably just prescribe the most antibiotics of any health practitioners that there are. So those are situations where I think you can have a meaningful discussion with your dentist or your dermatologist about whether there's another approach.
Really? The dermatologist, hey? Because of just like things that are showing up in the skin and they think that will help?
Well, it does. It will often clear up an acne or some type of a skin problem. But the issue is, typically when something's coming out in the skin, that, you know, that's a major organ, and an outward sign in is often connected to some dysbiosis in the gut.
Yeah. Yeah. You see that a lot with eczema as well. Actually, a lot of eczema treatments are topical and they might help reduce the redness or the itching. But the reality is like, that's a inflammation flare up from gut health issues that have not been addressed. You know, the microbiome is so interesting. And the more and more we learn about it, the more complex it seems, right? So, you know, gut health is such a trendy topic, but now we're also talking about the skin microbiome. There's a vaginal microbiome, the oral microbiome. And I love that we're really moving to that place of understanding that we kind of just have bacteria on top of us or over us kind of everywhere. And it just makes me also think like, so many decisions that I make day to day impact that bacteria. And a big thing that you talk about is like our environmental toxins impacting this microbiome. So can you kind of make that connection with us? Like, what environmental toxins are impacting our microbiome? And can I actually feel this on a daily basis or see it? Or is this going to show up 10 years from now?
Well, I think one of the key things is, you don't really see it on a daily basis. And so it's easy for people not to make that connection. But, you know, one of the things that I first started looking at when I was looking at the food supply was all of the herbicides and pesticides that are used on our food. And, you know, most of the regulations around those are, you know, the numbers are set at levels where they're like, well, you know, you're not going to get exposed to this. But as over the years, more and more and more of these herbicides and pesticides are getting used on different crops, the sort of the buildup of it over time gets larger and larger. And one in particular that I have looked at a lot is glyphosate, which there's actually a research paper from 2014 that showed the correlation of about 20 different diseases, including Parkinson's, and the use of glyphosate and GMO corn and soy. And it was pretty alarming. It has not been updated since that time. And from 2014 until now, so 10 years, there are now more than 60 crops that actually use glyphosate as a drying agent to spray on the crop at the end of harvest to speed up the harvest process. And so you get things like, people think chickpeas are healthy, but chickpeas are one of the highest in glyphosate. Chickpeas, lentils, you know, all of your legumes, all of your grains. And so I think that at least in part, some of the problems that people have eating grains are related to the herbicides used in the drying process.
If you're like me, you are thinking about your energy field, you're thinking about radiation, EMF, and 5G around you. And honestly, you're kind of worried about it as well. What if I told you you could just get a product, put it in your house, set it and forget it, and know that you're actually reducing the amount of EMF and radiation around you? That's where Lila Quantum Tech comes in. Their products actually neutralize EMF, even in electric cars. And this is so, so important because we are so bombarded with the amount of EMF and radiation in today's society. So their key product that I love is their Infinity Block. And it has actually been proven to increase ATP production, which is the energy in our cells, by 20 to 29%. So this really, really does matter. Lila Quantum Tech has over 59 studies, and they actually also have another 6 in progress. They are randomized, placebo-controlled, and double-blind studies proving the great benefits of their products. I really suggest you get this Infinity Block. If you can get something that you can put in your house and say, hey, this is actually helping to neutralize how much EMF me and my family are exposed to, it just makes sense. Why would you not want some sort of safety measure like that that you can count on? They also have a Heal capsule, which is like a little capsule that you can bring with you anywhere you go. And it does this same thing, obviously, to a smaller degree and smaller circumference around you. So I like to wear this when I go on planes because there's so much radiation on planes and EMF. And I like to wear it just in general when I travel. Their products have been proven to optimize HRV and improve your blood and obviously ATP production, like I said. So that's what I would do. I would really recommend looking into how you can manage your quantum energy field better, because this is such a key aspect of optimizing your health. You can get a significant discount through the link on my website and also in the show notes, and that will help you be able to get this at a better price. So again, that's Lila Quantum Tech. I have the Infinity Block. It's in my bedroom. I actually sleep right beside it. And then I also have their Heal capsule on a necklace that I take with me everywhere I go. And these are the two that I would recommend. I think this is a great starting pack for you and provides substantial coverage in order to neutralize the EMF that's around you and optimize your health.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of issues with it. I think like you said, our food quality is just not what it once was. And that includes the herbicides and pesticides that are used and how we have to metabolize that and digest that. And our body has to make sense of these foreign toxins, right? Like, we don't just get to eat all of this food with these things sprayed on it and then we just like poop it out and, you know, nothing happened. There is a process that happens in the body and it does affect things. It's just kind of not a lot of people know about it, or not a lot of people care. Or like you said, we don't really see the impact on a day-to-day basis. We see it later on. And so it's hard to kind of pinpoint, oh, this is the herbicides from the grains that I've been eating, right? It's really hard to like get to that root cause and say that. So it's complex, but I think it is really important that we're kind of talking about this. Yeah. Are there certain questions that people ask you when you kind of explain this to them? Like, people who might not necessarily understand this, or any pushback that you get?
Most of the time people are, it's like a light bulb goes off for them, or like, oh, I totally get it. And like, one of the things I've talked about is with my husband and other people with Parkinson's, I would kind of get, by interviewing people, a kind of a life health timeline. So I would ask them questions about what illnesses they had as a child, or what kind of jobs they had. Like, my husband worked on a golf course for 4 years in high school, so obviously lots of exposure there. He was in the oil and gas industry, so hydrocarbons. He grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, so lots of chemical exposure. When he was a kid, the river caught on fire. But when I start to sort of paint that life picture, and then I overlay stressors and diet and all these different sort of pieces on top of it, and explain to them how each of those things can have this light bulb kind of goes off for them, and they start being able to connect dots all the way back to, you know, they'll say, oh, you know, I grew up in a rural area as a kid and they used to spray the crops and we would go play in the puddles and the stuff in the puddles. And so, you know, things they haven't thought about when I can sort of paint that picture for them, they start making the connections themselves.
Yeah. Especially once you start, like you said, you start learning about it and you look back and you're like, oh, that's what that was. And that's actually what that means for my health. I think that's really empowering, honestly, for people to make better choices today and be able to connect those dots from the past. Do you have, you know, recommendations for people for the present? Like say they do have that history of being exposed or living in rural farm areas. Like, what do you tell people now of how to navigate these environmental toxins that impact our microbiome?
I mean, it's quite tricky to navigate a detoxification process, which is something I actually learned from one of our probiotics that has a number of detoxification mechanisms in it, where we had people who would start out on the probiotic at the recommended, you know, one capsule twice a day. So one in the morning and one in the evening. And they would kind of have a bit of a crash. Some of them would have a bit of a crash because they were detoxifying too quickly. And so we started to say, okay, you need to, if you are hypersensitive to any kind of toxin load, you need to start with either one capsule or even half a capsule. And then we saw that people could actually detoxification process much better. And we ended up doing a clinical trial and did before and after microbiome data. And that's where we saw that this huge, like a 900% increase in the genes involved, something called cytochrome 450, which are detoxification enzymes.
Wow. That's huge. That's so impactful. And yeah, I'm glad that they have, that you educate people on this and they actually have something that they can turn to help. You know, lifestyle modifications are obviously important. Same with nutrition, but it is also great to have something that you can take every day to kind of support this as well. So when you were developing your probiotic, you know, based off of your history with your husband and all this research that you were doing on the microbiome and environmental toxins and xenobiotics, what was the most important thing for you when you were creating it? Like, what did you say, I want this to be different from everything else on the market, so I'm going to do this? Like, kind of explain it to us your thoughts about it.
Well, I actually came up with the idea after going to a Parkinson's conference, and there were some researchers who presented data showing that the sugar alcohol mannitol could stop the aggregation of the proteins that were involved in Parkinson's and pull them out of the brain of a mouse. And so I came back and I got this little mannitol chemistry book and started studying it. And there were a handful of probiotic organisms, basically, that could make mannitol by converting glucose and fructose. So I had a friend who was in the probiotics industry, and I sat down with him and I said, you know, could we basically put back a factory into the gut that would convert the glucose and fructose that we're either getting in our diet or endogenously making in our body and convert that to mannitol? And so we came up with this concept. And so the original concept was to produce mannitol in the gut to try to help my husband's Parkinson's. And so we did that. We did a, you know, an N of one study with him measuring his microbiome, and we could see it moving back closer to the healthy human microbiome profile. And he stopped walking with a cane at that time, and a measure that they look at in Parkinson's called the UPDR score improved. And so we're like, okay, we think we've got something here. And we just started having people try it, and other people with not Parkinson's started trying it and saying, wow, this is incredible. This has changed my cravings. This has given me better energy. This is helping my sleep. And so then we really started to look at, we built a computational model to be able to understand how they were working together and to really look at the underlying mechanisms. And ultimately went on to find that it helps with insulin and blood sugar regulation and did a clinical trial in diabetes.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I'm glad that you brought that up because I definitely do want to talk about sugar intake and the impact on the microbiome. This is not something that I necessarily think about even when I have sugar in whatever form that is, like whether it's fruit or maple syrup or whatever it is. It's not something that I think about. I think about my blood sugar for sure. And I think about my hormones. Absolutely. But I don't think, how is this impacting the bacteria right now or the bacteria in my gut? So how does that work? Like why is sugar so impactful on the microbiome and inflammation in general?
Well, there are a lot of pathogenic bacteria that prefer glucose and fructose to grow on. So when you eat a diet that is high in sugar, you are often feeding those gram-negative bacteria. And as they grow and then die off and grow and die off on that sugar, the cell wall components, which for gram-negative bacteria is called lipopolysaccharide, or LPS for short, that's an endotoxin. And that can actually cross over your gut lining, your bloodstream, and cause inflammation all over the body. So what people don't realize is, you know, when they're eating sugar, they're not just feeding themselves, they're feeding a certain profile of bacteria in their gut.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of hard to understand and hard to think about, especially for people who follow the standard American diet that is, yeah, I mean, it's so complex, right? Because a lot of people will choose foods that are more affordable and more accessible. And there's something to be said about that from a society standpoint and how that is not, you know, it's a multifaceted societal problem that we're currently facing with that. But at the same time, that same food that is cheaper and not as healthy has a serious, serious impact on our microbiome and on our hormones, on our blood sugar, and on our inflammation levels. And it's hard to kind of always remember that when you're making those decisions on what you should eat. So do you have recommendations for people in terms of how to navigate that, whether it's like in a grocery store or in a restaurant, or what do you even do to kind of like mitigate those harmful effects?
Well, I actually do just work the perimeter of the grocery store. And I think, you know, you hear that a lot, but that is where food is. That's where the, you know, fresh Bouvoir, that's where the meat. I do eat dairy, but I get dairy from a local farmer. And then my husband actually doesn't eat, he doesn't have cow milk. He uses goat milk and we make our own kefir. But it can be quite challenging for, you know, the cost. But I do think if people learn how to cook, you know, they think that eating a whole foods, fresh food diet is more expensive. But I think really, if you start to understand how to cook and, you know, make a meal that can be eaten more than once, or to cook, say, you know, ground beef that you can put in several different meals, or, you know, dice your vegetables that you can use in different ways, that there are ways to make it more economical. But it does take time. And I think that's also one of the challenges in today's world, is people are so short on time. And so really trying to plan ahead and think about what your meals are going to be, so that you, one, can save money and look for the specials and, you know, do your prep in advance if possible.
I think those are great ideas. I do very similar, like following the perimeter of the grocery store, farmers markets, those types of things, just trying to have the healthy food from the start. You know, like if I don't bring it in the house, I'm not going to be able to eat it. So I'm just very careful about what I actually choose to buy and bring in the house. Because once it's in the house, it's very hard for me to not eat it. So I stop it before it even comes in the door. So I think there are a lot of like helpful, useful tips like that. And I also really do agree with what you said with eating food at home and making food at home, you are so much more in control of everything, like from the ingredients to the cooking methods, to the oils that you use, to how much you eat, to when you eat. And so there, it's infinitely healthier than whatever meal you buy at a restaurant or buy at a takeout store, whatever it is. So the more you can eat at home, even like adopting that simple principle of let me eat dinner at home more often, you're going to be healthier from that. Like even if it's not the healthiest thing, even if it's pasta, still that pasta is going to be healthier than the pasta that you get at a restaurant that has been fried in canola oil and is GMO and blah, 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 all these things. So yeah, I think that's such a simple point, but like you said, we don't make the time for it as much. So then we really have to look at things like food prepping, buying in bulk, making things in bulk, freezing dinners, being able to pull it out last minute if we need something. It's such a commitment, but it is really worth it because the benefits of your health really do pay off.
Yes. And you know, one of the other things I would say about cooking at home is there's something about the intention that you put into the food that you're preparing for yourself and preparing for people that you love that, you know, I do feel like the intention that we put into things has an important impact on us that maybe realize or give credit to. But that process of making something that we're putting ourselves into is also potentially beneficial.
Yep. Yeah, I completely agree with you. I was actually in the grocery store a while ago and I was looking at the probiotics section and I saw probiotics that are specifically designed for women. And I have never taken one of these and most of my listeners are females. And so I'm curious what your thoughts are when you see stuff like this. Like, are there actually certain strains of bacteria that are more beneficial for women? And there is validity to those types of products. I'm not sure if it's just for vaginal microbiome or if it's for gut microbiome, but I'd love your two cents on those.
You know, some of it can just be marketing. Some of it can actually be valid. And so I'll say that there are definitely vaginal microbiome strains that have been studied and that they're looking at. But most people don't realize that an oral probiotic could actually make its way into the vagina. And this was really interesting. There's a scientist from New Zealand. I wish I could remember her name right now, who has the most interesting TED talk about this, where she labeled an E. coli in a mouse and fed it to the mouse and then showed how it went through the gut, but ended up in the vagina, which we don't realize how all these systems are interconnected. And then what I will say is, you know, when we developed our computational model, we laid out about 25 different mechanisms or health issues or different things that we would want to look at. And one of those was hot flashes and how we might be able to address that in the microbiome. Now, we haven't brought that product to the market yet, but you can look at the genetic capabilities of the species of bacteria that you're putting together and how they might affect components of hormone metabolism that could be contributing to, say, a hot flash or something like that. So, yes, those can be valid. I won't say that everyone that you find out there that says it's for women is, you know, perfectly formulated in that way, but it's certainly possible.
Okay, that's good to know. So basically, do your research on the company to assess whether it's a viable company or not, and then look at the product as well. I mean, as you know, there's so many supplement companies now. So many of them are just garbage, like straight up, and I just wouldn't trust. So be very diligent. And I also, you know, a lot of my listeners are female, and I also focus a lot on preconception health and fertility and pregnancy, postpartum, and kind of that area and that time in women's lives. And I know there are, I don't know specifically, but I know there are recommendations for probiotics for babies, but I think it might be older than 6 months old. I don't quote me on that. I have to check. But is this something that you actually think makes sense, like you would like to see? Or do you think it's maybe not necessary if a baby is like breastfed, which is a raw food and is a complete whole food, that they might actually not need some sort of bacteria from a supplement?
Well, you know, there's a lot of interesting components that I wasn't aware of in the childbirth process until I got into this field and actually was talking to my OBGYN about, you know, babies who are cesarean versus vaginal birth not getting seeded. And we were having a conversation about this, and I was asking her about, you know, do you agree with basically swabbing a cesarean baby with, you know, basically vaginal fluid to inoculate them? And she was like, oh no, we would never do that. Besides that, we give all babies antibiotics as soon as they're born. And that was like, what? Like, and it was kind of a double take for me. So there's a group who actually studied the baby microbiome all around the world. And what they found was babies in westernized populations had lost this very important Bifidobacterium infantis that colonized these indigenous populations. And this particular bacteria is very important in training the immune system. And it would form these single colonies that would basically knock out every other thing that tried to come into the gut and train the immune system. And, you know, a big percentage of our babies have lost that organism. And so they actually brought this product, it's called Evivo, to market. And so it is, that bacteria does like breast milk. So I don't know how well it would colonize without breastfeeding, but it might be worth a try even if you aren't able to breastfeed.
Okay. I'm going to look that up after this. I think that's really interesting. And yeah, I like that seeding is becoming more popular. For those who don't know what that is, it's basically like you were kind of saying, is during a C-section that you can do it yourself or you can ask somebody in the room to do it, but you basically swab your vagina and then you put it on directly onto the baby's skin so that the baby gets all of the healthy bacteria from your vagina that the baby would have gotten during a vaginal delivery. And I like that that's kind of becoming more common now that we're focusing on that and acknowledging that microbiome, even in a hospital setting, is huge. Like, I think that's such a big step forward, but it is, yeah, there's still pushback and there's still a lot of people who might think it's not necessary, but I'm glad that you said that. And I'm glad we're kind of really looking at the microbiome from day one, right? Like, how does it change based off of how we're born even? And what does this mean for developing a robust microbiome that we can rely on and becomes our core microbiome? Like you said, I was a C-section baby from my mom and I had a bunch of sinus issues as a kid. And so I took a bunch of antibiotics multiple times as a kid on top of being a C-section baby. And then when I became a teenager, I had like hormonal issues. And so every time I kind of like connect the dots of my story, I always think like it really did start with that C-section and not having a robust microbiome from the start and then throwing antibiotics on top of it as a kid multiple times really just like did not set me up for best success. But also we didn't know better back then. But yeah, it's just, it's all connected, you know?
Well, and then there's a couple, Justin and Erica Sonnenberg at Stanford University, who have actually looked at this in, I mean, studying it in animal models, but in multiple generations where, you know, each time you're losing a bit more of that population and this long-term impact into the subsequent generations.
Wow, that's huge. Yeah. Almost like transgenerational health, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, that's really scary. Scary, but also empowering at the same time, because your decisions actually make a huge difference for you and your offspring and your offspring's offspring. And yeah, that's really empowering. So if people are listening to this and they're like, okay, I really want to try your probiotic formula, which one do you kind of recommend that they start with? And what's your go-to?
So our go-to really is that Sugar Shift formula because it's such a broad overall metabolic formula. And so many people today are suffering from some form of metabolic dysregulation. And in our, you know, in our clinical trial, we showed that it increases detoxification. It's increasing the diversity of the microbiome and restoring some of the keystone species like bifidobacteria and roseburia and fecali bacteria. It's also helping with insulin resistance and just overall kind of reshaping the ecosystem is how I like to say it. And so that's typically where we recommend that people start, unless they have a more specific problem. We do have one that's for cardiovascular health. We have one that is specific to immune health and targets foodborne pathogens. So it's great for travel or if you eat out a lot in restaurants and salad bars. That one's called Ideal Immunity. We do have one if you've taken a dose of a course of antibiotics that was specifically designed to help restore the microbiome. And that one is called Antibiotic Antidote. And so we recommend taking that for a bit after you've taken the antibiotics before you maybe switch to Sugar Shift. And then we have one for sleep, which seems to be the second largest problem that we hear from people is they're just not sleeping well. And so we have one called Simple Slumber that you take about an hour before bedtime, and it helps with tryptophan production and bacterial melatonin to help you sleep better.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah, it's exciting that you have such a diverse range of products because I think it's needed. And yeah, you know, just helping people's different pain points is something we should focus on. And also just explaining that like you can have different bacteria for different things. And when you combine it with other ingredients, it can really support these different symptoms that you might be dealing with is really helpful. So people want to try those or connect with you. Where can they do that and how can they find you?
So they can find me. So the company is Biotic Quest. So it's BioticQuest, bioticquest.com. And that's where you can find the products. We have a Biotic Quest YouTube channel where I do a lot of talks and education on there. And I have a Parkinson's microbiome blog that's called Martha's Quest. So you can find me there. And you can also email me at martha.carlin@bioticquest.com.
Awesome. I will link all of that in the show notes and put it on my website so people can easily find you. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. This was great. And I loved learning about the microbiome from you.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Biohacking with Brittany. If you're interested in finding the show notes or the sponsors for this episode, you can do so on my website, which is biohackingbrittany.com. Remember to follow me on Instagram, where I'm most active. My handle is @biohackingbrittany. And if you're interested in working together and you want to email me directly, you can do that. My email is info@biohackingbrittany.com. And I look forward to hearing from you and having you tune in next week.